Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Yes, welcome to the Curb Your Enthusiasm After Show. The only show that comes with instant dance moves. Welcome. I'm Christian Blatt, known across the world. Not really.
I was informed.
Yeah. But known in some circles for in comedy circles, as the longtime producer and co-host for comedian Dennis Miller. Flobo.
Hey, what's up?
I believe you are a comedian in your own right.
Yes, I am. Album now, American For Now, now available in stores. Got to put that on there as much as I can, you know?
I can't believe that Chappelle beat you for the Grammy last night.
Yeah, I know. I was That's up there. I was outside the nomination circle. Next year's mine.
Next year's going to be
yours,
right? Running for you, man.
But Dave felt like this was his year.
Yeah.
Next year, 2021, the year of Flobo.
Exactly.
James.
Yo.
That's all we really needed.
Yeah.
No. Say hello to the people, and we'll remind them your background with Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes. Hello, everyone. I'm James Maple. I'm new to Curb Your Enthusiasm. Got a fresh set of eyes, but I'm a big comedy fan, so I'm super excited to be on the panel, give you my insight into this awesome show that I'm now currently obsessed with.
And making her debut on our panel, Happy New Year, Rachel Goodman.
Well, thank you, Christian Blatt.
And you missed it last week, the Happy New Year's. And we'll try and keep it going.
Oh, yeah, it was good.
And you, in addition to being a fan of comedy and having been on a number of AfterBuzz panels with myself, you are also an accomplished author.
Yeah, I'm actually, I will be self-publishing for the first time in 2020.
Awesome.
I'm a huge comedy fan, and there's always comedy in everything I write. So on top of that, I also love Curb Your Enthusiasm. And just a random note, I love Mel Brooks. And I know, you know, we've seen him.
So. Yes.
Yeah. That's true. He has been on the show.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's just go just overall thoughts about a minute, just what you thought about the show as a whole. Rachel, we, of course, will go ladies first here. And since you weren't here last week, your thoughts on you can quickly give your thoughts on the first two episodes of the season thus far.
It's hilarious. I think this is, you know, obviously, as a female too, what I really appreciate with this episode in particular, and the last one, but this one, that we kind of get to see the other side of the Me Too movement. Now, granted, I am a full supporter of the Me Too movement, and I think that there's absolutely a problem, but it's also kind of hilarious to see someone like Larry dealing with it. How sometimes, like, there are just moments where, okay, he kind of really messed up here, but then other things that weren't really that bad that were taken out of context. Mm-hmm. So to me, I'm just watching this like, okay, this show is hilarious, and I love how they're handling everything in 2020. It's a very fresh take.
No, absolutely. James, your thoughts on
this
episode?
I'm going to kind of piggyback on that a bit. As a new kind of viewer of the show, I'm shocked at the topics in which the show tackles.
Sure, absolutely.
Like, we'll go into greater detail, but it's just shocking to me, like you said, the Me Too movement. I was like, whoa, we're going there. Okay, we're gonna be laughing about these things. But it's done in such a clever way that it's almost like something so devastating like the Me Too movement and what goes on with it. It can kind of bring us together a bit with a little bit of brevity. So I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm so shocked again at some of the topics that the show tackles. So this was a great episode for me.
Can I say one more thing, too?
Sure.
Kind of going off of what you said, mm-hmm. the fact that he could bring up cancer and somehow it's hilarious.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's true.
I'm like, what is this? That's all I wanted to
add. No, Larry can navigate a lot of, rough waters, as it were. What are your thoughts on the second episode?
This one was actually a float a lot better than the first one. Not that the first one had the Herculean task of reestablishing the world and introducing what Curb of This was. But I'm now seeing what the engine looks like in season 10. But to add on to the Me Too movement things, I actually had a, when I first started doing comedy, I had a similar bit where I was texting my girlfriend and she wanted to go on a date and send me a permission slip and I'll get it notarized. And to see it actually play out on the screen, it's like, you know, for a guy from a different time, you know, it's something he's really struggling with. And we saw that later on and how he tried to maneuver that. So
are you saying you're a guy from a different time and that you're from the 2010s?
I'm well traveled, you know, these both decades I've been around.
After the show, I'm going to tell you about the 90s, but we don't have to talk about
that. Music was on disc.
Let's talk about the sort of the way the show opens, and we'll kind of follow this through line through. Larry's lawyer, who is, you know, kind of breaking down the sexual harassment case. And Larry talks about how if he doesn't win, he's going to leave the country. I guess I'll go to Canada, you know, because he just knows people say that, you know, how it would be an injustice. I wanted to kind of get everybody's thoughts on the lawyer's restroom, and Larry actually using the restroom and how he gets cornered about that. Rachel, you first.
So I want to take a poll to see how many of us would actually have used the bathroom.
Absolutely would have
because
used it. 100%
probably
would have used it.
Yes.
Yes. Well, the center here.
Look, here's the thing. Not to get too graphic. Number one, yes. Number two, probably not.
Yes. No? The ventilation alone.
You can't pretend. You can't be like, no, I didn't. Yeah. It'd be like, something died in there. Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
But number one for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. If I had to go, I don't want to go use a public restroom. Yeah. You know?
That's for
Can I be the voice of dissent here? Here's this guy putting himself through law school and the only perk he ever wanted besides his cool car and his dope house is his own personal bathroom for a reason.
Yeah.
And he just says no.
Well, that's why it should have a lock on it and you need a key.
Exactly.
If you really don't want someone in your bathroom, lock it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so or one of those little punch codes. That's all you need.
Yeah. I have a personal story about this, actually. So years ago, I worked for a company that shall remain nameless. And my boss had his own private bathroom. And my last day, it was like a big rule. You do not use this bathroom.
Sure, of course not.
My last day, guess what your boy did?
I took my time.
I took my sweet time. And I deliberately, this may be kind of graphic, I peed all over that seat.
Yes!
I did not like that man at all. He was not a good man. So I got my revenge the best way I could. I knew his bathroom.
By marking territory?
Yes, I marked my territory. And then I left. So
I mean, I think the best way to do it would have been a deuce in the sink. But that's all right.
I'm a classy dude. You know what I mean?
Hashtag classy revenge.
Yeah, there you go. Like that. Yeah, not me. I go literally for the gutter.
Yeah.
All right, Flobo, your thoughts on the lawyer and the restroom and getting Larry under oath. Larry, I think I called him Gary. I'm thinking Gary Shandling, not that different.
Yeah, different. Cool crossover, actually.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you're looking at the bathroom there. He asked nicely, says no.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. I would totally do it. And he denies it. But I will say this. That CSI scene of him getting rid of all the evidence was perfect. Yeah. It's perfect for me.
He gets rid of a hair that may not even be his.
Exactly.
Yeah. And he's just like, I'm getting this out of here.
Yeah.
And then he took the napkin.
And then put it in his pocket.
Well, right. That's a smart move. Sometimes you got to hide the evidence.
Yeah.
See, he knew that would have been a rookie mistake. You feel like Larry possibly, let me know what you think, James, has used the restroom before that he's been encouraged not to.
I mean, as someone who has done that before, as an expert on pillaging bathrooms, I definitely think he did it the right way. If you gotta get in there, do your business and leave. Unless you're trying to spite somebody, then get in there, do your business, and make a splash.
Make a splash.
That's all I'm saying.
What did the lawyer notice that was different? Like, what do you think the lawyer noticed that was different? That's really got me.
I really wanted to know that myself because he walked in and then kind of like
it's like he knew
something was up. Well, to me, it was maybe like the amount of paper towels that he had. Okay. That was my first impression.
Somehow he smelled things.
That's good.
But it could also just be the door wasn't open. You know, it wasn't ajar the right amount. It was either closed a little too much, open a little too much.
He's also a lawyer, and he probably understands when someone's lying to him or is uncomfortable.
You would hope if he's a good lawyer.
Yeah. The way that Larry looked was pretty,
suspicious.
Dead giveaway.
And we probably all felt this coming, but James, what did you think about when the lawyer has Larry under oath, and he's like, "Yeah, I have one more question for you." I was just like, "All right, this is going to be good." Did you use my restroom? Did that surprise you at all?
It did. I thought he was going to tell the truth because he was under oath. But of course,
well, he didn't actually give the answer, did he?
No, it cut to the credits.
Yeah, it cut right to the credits. I was hoping that it would have been this bigger explosion of a scene.
Right.
But I mean, I guess there's always the next episode, so we'll see.
Yeah. Well, if you saw the commercial for the next episode, the lawyer is in there, so this may come up again.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
So, to James' point, I thought it'd be opposite. I thought, like, you know what? I side sit. I grabbed the boob. Like, I thought everyone implode at this point, but we didn't get an answer.
Yeah. Well, it's all working up and building together. Obviously, at the end, that was sort of a great moment to see how it all led to that moment. What were you going to say, Rachel?
Oh, I thought that at first he did say no, but then the lawyer asked him again, and then they were like, they cut it.
Yeah, I think that might be what happened. Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So that's one crisis averted. Then Larry also gets a call from his doctor that he has to come in. Now, has anybody ever had an MRI? I hope none of you have ever had to.
I've had an MRI.
And it's only 20 minutes, but it's like, I don't know, it's like 4 hours of just being in there. Because if you move like that, you got to start over.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Like, you can't move. Like, you can blink, but I just keep my eyes closed. I'm like, I can't move. And, of course, as soon as you go in, everything itches. I was surprised that they didn't play up the MRI more. What were you going to say?
Well, I've had an MRI. My husband's had an MRI. When he went in, they had to give him a Valium. That's how bad it was.
Because
it's not even just – it's the tight space. It's the noise.
I mean, I didn't even know that was an option. If they were giving him a Valium, let me get one for the road. Don't worry. I'm taking an Uber. It's fine. Saturday night. Let me do a half.
Don't give Larry any ideas. Yeah, he'll be going back for an MRI.
Yeah, that's true. When I saw that come up, I actually expected... I don't know, I thought we were going to get more out of it, but obviously there's only so much you can do. And I was going to say in a half-hour show, but this was 36 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that the cancer storyline, cancer as the backdrop, was very funny. The number of times that it came up, I thought the most interesting part, James, was the cancer pact that Larry and his friends went into. That if any of them got cancer, they would not be friends with the rest of them would not be friends with that one. Yeah. What did you think of that?
You know, I was really, really surprised by that. Again, to go back to my, like, me being new to the show.
Yeah, this is only your second episode.
I'm like, yo, y'all are really going to do this to this man right now? Yeah. So it was so interesting, and I was kind of taking it back, and I didn't know where I know where I would stand personally. Of course, I would still be friends with that person. But I can appreciate the sheer honesty of his friends being like, you know what, homie? No, I'm just, that's really going to be cutting into my sitting around time, so I can't deal with your cancer
I mean,
story.
I think, Flobo, let me know if you agree, I think it helps that three of them are comedians/writers, and then, of course, Jeff is an agent, but, you know, he's in the comedy world, so, and obviously Jeff Garlin is a comedian, and I feel like that's a comedian thing. Like, yeah, I don't really want to see you at the end of your life.
Look, everyone, we are friends, up times, there's down times, and look, instead of going there and having this farce where you're like, I just don't know what to say.
Yeah.
It's so difficult. Just say, look, I'm opting out. I'm out. Let me know when you get better. It's all good. It's terrible, but it's true.
And if anybody is familiar with Richard Lewis's stand-up, he would definitely strike you as the person who would absolutely not want to be your friend. However, were he to have cancer, you would all hear about it, and he might be inviting himself over,
of course.
You know, and like, you know, things like that. What did you think, Rachel?
I was not surprised they reacted this way at all. I was like, okay, this seems very fitting, and I actually kind of expected they would tell him, yeah, like, just leave now. Don't talk.
Well, this show has that kind of tone.
Yeah, I totally love it, man.
I love it.
Welcome.
Everybody had honesty. Yeah. As always, Leon is the bluntest honesty. Yeah. And he's just like, oh, yeah, no.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it was hilarious, though. And I wouldn't have expected anything less.
Yeah. So keeping that in mind, I was a little surprised later in the episode when Larry starts to get annoyed that no one called to ask about how the test went. It was like, well, we don't want to be your friend if we find out about the cancer, so we're not going to pretend that we care about the test leading up to it. And especially, again, back to Richard Lewis, just saying like, yeah, I thought about calling you, But then I didn't.
Yeah.
Which is, again, a great honest answer.
Yeah, I thought it was on brand with the whole, like, oh, that party, I wish I could have gone, but I got lost in
the man. We'll get to that.
I just figured that was like
we'll get to the
U.S. I wanted to call your cancer thing, but...
See, I loved the response of, I just completely forgot.
Yeah. That was Leon, right?
Yeah, it was Leon.
Yeah. Again, the very blunt honesty. Leon is honest to a fault, I'm sure. I think that that was sort of funny. But since... You mentioned it. Well, actually, no, there's one other time where it came up when Larry was with Cheryl. He tried to mention the cancer diagnosis when she was talking about how, like, I don't really see us together, which, by the way, good for her. Finally gotten some sense. And
she almost died last week.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, keep that in mind.
Tell Potter.
And just the idea that, and then Larry's like, yeah, so what if they told me that it was only 2 years? So he's like trying to say, it's like, if it's only 2 years, you have to be with me. What did you think about that, Rachel?
I was laughing. First of all, before he brought, I called it the cancer card. That's like literally what I wrote in my notes.
Yes. Wow.
And I was like, oh, he's going there.
Of course, I can feel
it. He dropped it. And, like, her reaction, like, that deadpan of, nah, I just don't see it going that way. I was like, good for her. Like, because this dude, like, so Larry, just the fact that he would even drop it for the wrong reasons felt characteristic, but it was just hilarious. They couldn't have played the scene any better, especially with the side sitting.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. And I just love the fact that she, even if he only had 2 years to live, she still was like, nope, not going there.
I can appreciate his follow-up. And he was kind of, he was like, well, look, how about if we hire a nurse? I just complain to the nurse. like, you can be in your own kind of separate life. And I can still have my cancer, but keep my complaints to the side.
Well,
and
my cancer.
Yeah, and they would travel together. Yeah. And the nurse would come,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I'm like, well, so, look at him trying.
Can I just say cancer cards sound like something that would be on a Curb with You as a show? Like, I gave her the card. It didn't work out. What's going on?
Oh, no, you didn't play the cancer card. I played it.
I played it quite well.
Yeah, right, exactly. So we referenced, sort of as we transition now to Larry and Cheryl, the side sitting. And I feel very comfortable side sitting with my wife. In a way, the idea that you have to sit across from someone at a meal, it's usually the layout of the table. Sure, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the table is much larger. You know, two people get seated at a table that's really for six, but, you know, it's not busy. They're like, yeah, just sit here. And sometimes you just want to sit closer to the person. As a fellow married person, Rachel, what do you think about side sitting?
Well, at least he wasn't next to sitting. That would have been even creepier.
Oh, I've done that.
Yeah.
But with my wife.
Yeah. No, like, when me and my husband go out, if it's
the,
like,
aforementioned Hubby Joe.
Yes. Yeah. And we can't hear each other because it's super loud and it's a big enough table. I might sit next to him if it's a long table. But, like, otherwise,
Like, when you and Hubby Joe go to an all-night rave in Long Beach down at the docks, you guys sit next to each other because it's just too loud.
Exactly.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Those raves just get too wild.
I'm going to interject this. I work in the service industry. I'm a server. I'm cool with the side sitting. This is going to coming from the worker side of things. But if you're going to sit to someone's side, I'm going to need you to stay in your seat. Stay in your seat. Because behind the scenes, there are seat numbers that food goes to. People getting up and switching seats. Well, sit your behind down and stay there.
I can see that being a bigger problem when you have more than a party of two.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've certainly switched seats. Like, I can't hear you.
Yeah.
So that has to be annoying. Like, did you order the tuna melt? No, I got spaghetti.
The worst is when you drop stuff off and people start eating it. I'm like, I didn't order this. I'm like, you have one job.
Yeah.
You have one job.
Yeah.
Remember what you ordered. I have all these jobs. You have one.
And somehow, let me guess, it's your fault, right?
Yeah. Somehow. You should have known I switched seats. Yeah, you and the 17 other people, I'm looking at all your seat movements right now.
I would read this book about all the things that mess up a server. This is pretty
cool. I'm a right one.
With side sitting, you have a very small window when you get to the restaurant to decide to sit on the side. Mm-hmm. You don't switch mid-meal.
Yeah.
Rookie mistake. Not a fan of that at all.
Now, here's the thing, though. If I was going to, like, in a world where I met up with, like, an ex, I'm not going to side sit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to be, like, further away sitting.
We're peeling it back. This is Larry's ex.
Yeah.
However, they have been intimate very recently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he is, of course, interested in pursuing that.
Yeah.
So Cheryl might not want him to side sit, but I can see Larry feeling like that it's appropriate.
Right. Yeah.
Although he does eventually move back. So I think that's when he's like, oh, it's not going to happen.
Right.
All right. I don't know if he thought that the side sitting was going to close the deal.
No.
Yeah. So, in general, and let us know in the chat whether you're watching live or you're watching the archive, how do people feel about side-sitting? And let's say side-sitting with just a friend, whether it's a member of the same sex or the opposite sex, if it's a date, but maybe like date two, know what I mean?
That's weird.
No, there's a lot of times where I can see that the side sitting would be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Let's get back to your assigned seat. You know?
It's like,
this is a ticketed event. You have seat 204. I'm in 207. So we can talk.
Personal space.
So romantic.
Yeah.
So romantic.
Well, look, that's how you got to look at the world.
Right.
All right. Look, I don't get out into the world much except for these shows. So this is the way I remember.
Well, I live here. Checkmate.
Yeah. All right. You showed me up. And I think that from that conversation, we do get a great Larry moment, which I thought was very funny, is that he can't date now. Not in this class. I think that was to Jeff, right? That he can't date now because he's old and bald. Yeah, so I have that actually in the wrong part of my notes. But
still a fact.
It's valid that even he's like, but to Rich, I'm sorry, Rich definitely trumps old and bald. It trumps one easier than it trumps both.
True.
Yeah.
But Larry David, Rich, like this fictional version of Larry David is probably almost as rich as the real Larry David, has more, probably has more money than Jerry Seinfeld somehow. If not, it's close.
Yeah.
So that's a real question. And I got to start with you, Rachel. Does Rich trump old and bald?
I mean,
a good personality would, and Larry can be funny.
I mean, I'm not, if you're asking me personally.
No, just in general.
In general, like, I would say somebody like him could get a date. Like, just.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, just by showing up and, like, I take that back. His personality might be a bit of a challenge.
But even when he's being obnoxious, he's usually still funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
He seems to have luck. I mean, he gets dates, so it's not like...
Yeah, that's when you realize that this is a fictional show. No, I'm just kidding. again, he's rich. So that's fine. What were you
saying? I firsthand know that Rich trumps bald. Firsthand. I've seen it. Trust me.
Yeah.
I've seen it. Again, going back to my restaurant references, telling you, I've seen it.
You guys are also rich.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So
that's wealth right there. This is a sheen of wealth right up here.
I think most people that are with gender expression, you are our age, we look for a little bit of security in our potential mates. I'm not saying that rich means you're totally fine and locked together, but from a distance, you have a way of paying the bills.
Yeah.
I feel a lot more safe with this person.
And I think, too, that Larry, he just kind of always exudes this confidence, whether he means to or not, like a quirky kind of confidence.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think it's the fact that he is stable and that he also kind of acts a certain way and comes off like he might be the rich dude.
Right.
So I think that helps. And people, knowing who he is on some level. I think that attitude definitely trumps being bald.
We'll continue to go through the show in a moment, but I want to make sure that everybody knows that before the end of the episode, we will get to our special segment, which is the Curb Correction Corner. And that is the moment where each of us will pick the moment where we least disagree with Larry. There could be, where we least agree with him. Mm-hmm. There could be dozens of those moments. We have to each pick one where we're like, no, this is when he was the most wrong in the episode. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of times where he's wrong. And then Flo Boy, I know you have some news.
Yeah.
And James is in the chat.
Yes.
And let us know when we have comments that you'd like to
weigh
in. Absolutely.
I've been posting questions. Nothing yet, but us know if you think Rich trumps personality, side sitting, let us know and we'll squall it back.
And the cancer card. We want to hear about the cancer card.
Give us a cancer card.
Embroidered everything.
And if you're not watching live, definitely leave a comment in the archive version and we will possibly get to it next week if we're not just too busy talking about another great episode. So we were talking about Larry and Jeff, and I think that's a great time to move over to another important storyline here in the episode, which is the painting of Susie. When the painting was unveiled, what did you think, James? You're not as familiar with the character. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like, oh my God, she's going to hate that picture? Because I didn't find it particularly flattering. Mm-hmm. Or were you not surprised that she loved it?
I thought she would love it.
Right.
But
you thought correctly.
I thought, yeah, yeah. I was more shocked that, because, you know, we've all been in a place where perhaps you've given a gift to someone and their significant other is there. I was more focused on that aspect of it. I don't think they played up too well, because I feel like he raised the gift bar so high that her husband was like, yo, like, I said camera.
Yeah, Jeff wanted him to get a camera.
Like, Jeff was like, bro, I said, you get this gorgeous piece of equipment right here. Not a camera. No, the bar is so high for me.
This beautiful, thoughtful gift.
Yeah.
And he, you know, now Jeff's like, well, what am I going to have to get? Yeah. You know, he was like, I was going to get two cameras. I don't know. What did you think, Rachel?
I was expecting her to nitpick it somehow.
Yeah.
So I was shocked when she loved as much as she did. But soon as she loved it, I kind of sensed that this was going to be a plot device so that something could happen so she could really hate him again.
And I do love when she says, Flobo, when she says, this is such a great, thoughtful gift. I've forgiven everything you've ever done. And Larry kind of understands, what have I ever done? Which, James, you might not know this, but throughout the previous 9 seasons, there's a lot.
Yeah.
He does a lot.
There's a lot of reasons that...
Well, just last week, she called Abraham Lincoln.
Just go back to last week.
That incident last week.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, it's funny because when Jeff is mentioning that Susie wants a camera for her birthday, I actually thought it was some kind of leverage because she knows about Larry and Cheryl. So it's like, I'm going to get a birthday present out of you, otherwise I'm going to tell Ted.
So
it just didn't go where I thought it would. Yeah,
absolutely. I didn't even see that.
So she's a better person than I am, because I would have immediately been like, how can I use this secret knowledge that I'm sworn to my advantage? I know, I'd like a camera.
Well, to answer your first question, I thought she was going to hate it because it was like blue steel.
Because look at it!
Yeah, it was kind of like, you know, Zool, you know, very like Ghostbusters 2.
And it's an enormous painting.
Yeah, it's huge.
You know, it's not like a movie poster, like one sheet, you know?
Yes.
This is like a Subway ad, you know? Yeah. And I don't mean the restaurant. It's like a gigantic, it's huge.
And I love how she put it in the dining room.
Yes. She had the table.
I loved her sitting in front of it, and she was carrying herself differently. That was great. And, of course, Larry gets angry about the aforementioned conversation about his cancer, his cancer pact with his friends. And, of course, he gets tomatoes all over it. So not a shock that Larry and somehow damaged the painting. But at that point, it's still possible to be repaired.
Mm-hmm. True. However, I would say I didn't believe that someone will give you raw tomatoes just on the plate.
I thought that dinner was a bit
strange. It was kind of weird. It was a salad, wasn't it?
I guess.
That's what you call a salad.
I mean, continue. I'm sorry.
The cherry tomatoes, or maybe like...
Like that. Yeah. This was like a Roma tomato just by itself.
It was pretty
raw.
Big.
I don't buy that juice would have gone all the way over there.
It was marinara sauce, right?
No, it was tomato juice.
It looked like tomato juice.
Now we're getting into Seinfeld territory with a second spitter, and you know, but...
But, like, the other thing is that obviously they made this, of course, they made this way more complicated than it had to be. They could have left the painting there, hired somebody to come and clean it up. It probably didn't need as much of a repair as they were making it out to be.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that tomato juice, like, going airborne and all the way over and then being as much of it as it was. Yeah. I'm sorry, but anytime I've done that with a tomato, it's gone like right in front of me. My shirt.
You could try to do that with, you could get like 1,000 tomatoes and try and do that, and I would say not succeed with any of them.
We need like a Mythbusters episode.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Can we, hey, Jeff in the booth, can we just get 1,000 cherry tomatoes in here? You go ahead. Go to Ralph's on Magnolia. You gotta get them.
I just put an A DoorDash. So
clutch. Flobo's gonna pay for it.
I thought it was really interesting too in that scene, again, with my fresh set of eyes for the series.
Sure, absolutely.
How the dinner escalated from there. He was pulling out knives and cursing at each other. I was like, yo, is this the kind of dinner we get? Is this our family sit down dinner?
This was a mild, calm
Tuesday night.
This is calm. Chucking knives.
I'll fix it. So the painting, unfortunately, is not destined to be repaired because the workman, whose name I actually I don't know if I want to take the time to look it up.
Okay.
To be honest, he's a great character. I don't know if you're important enough for me to look you up. Sorry.
Poor enough for Milos, yo.
Yeah. I thought it was Milos.
Yeah. I think it is. Okay. So Milos, he is, of course, you know, look, Susie's not really being particularly kind to him. Larry, very appreciative of the work he's doing with his Spike coffee shop. And, you know, he's going to bring some stuff over to Larry's house. And as soon as he sees the painting, and he starts cursing at it, which I thought was great.
Cream mahogany.
Not shocked that it ended up in the trash can, torn to shreds. But I expected maybe the damage would be revealed later, not just Susie and Jeff driving by.
Right.
Did that surprise you at all, James?
I actually, before I answer, I have a question. Did Jeff intentionally drive Susie
by?
Well,
I don't think he would have any reason to know that the painting had been damaged.
Because he had like this like little weird smirk when he like looked over and was like, yeah, you see that?
So you know what? That's a great question. So maybe he had seen it earlier.
Yeah.
And look, it could be a cut scene, you know, because it's already 36 minutes. So maybe they didn't want... Yeah. Actually, that would make sense if he's driving around like, oh my God, Susie, you got to get in the car.
Yeah,
you
know, he's like, oh, we're going to take a quick trip down the street.
We're going to go get mani pedis.
We're going to take the long way.
Exactly.
But I guess I was kind of shocked at like the sheer damage of it. Because before with the tomato, it was, you know, relatively repairable. But after Milos got his hands on it. God, he went ham on that painting.
I mean, you know, this guy works with his hands. So he can build, but he can tear it down.
He can destroy, man.
Yeah. What did you think, Rachel?
One, I thought that he was going to actually do worse than just the painting.
Yeah.
That we were going to see this, like, destroyed area where he had found the painting.
Okay. That would make sense.
I thought it was perfect the way they fit that in at the end where they had the drive-by.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, just the look on his face was, like, perfect.
Yeah.
But then on top of that, I knew that Larry getting possession of the painting again was not going to end well, and this was the perfect way for everything to go crazy.
Does Larry give him a bad review now? Will there be two bad reviews for me?
I don't know. He's not done with the Spike Coffee Shop next to Mama Joe.
Yeah.
So I think he has to. I think he feels bad too. So I mean, not so much about the painting, but you know, look, Larry, I don't think would be able to handle being on Susie's good side. So I think this is probably is the status quo. This is how the relationship should be. So when the painting is first damaged at the dinner, at first Larry's being very dismissive about, you know, how he got it done, the artist, and all of that. So I think that the reveal was honestly that, oh yeah, you guys didn't ask me about cancer. But I thought he was being evasive because, and this could still turn out to be the fact, I thought that this, he had commissioned the painting from one of the inmates that are also artists for the fundraiser that he did not attend, which ties into another topic. What did you think, Rachel?
I thought there was something sketchy with the painting. I didn't get that conclusion, but I kind of thought, oh, maybe this was somehow some kind of accident.
Right.
Like, he didn't even mean to do this.
This is a painting of Fran Drescher.
They were really harping on the fact that it looked like her.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they were kind of starting to discuss it, and which made him uncomfortable. And so I think that it was just he happened to see a painting of somebody, wasn't her, but kind of looked like her.
Looked enough
so
like her.
So he pretended that he had something commissioned to look like her. Because remember, one of the questions was, oh, what did you have to do? Send a photo in?
Yeah.
And he didn't want to answer
it. He's very short about that.
Yeah, I don't think he did. I think that he just found this painting, thought, oh, kind of, here we go. Yeah. I know what I'm going to do.
Maybe somebody else was throwing it away.
And yeah.
He just picked it up.
Good point.
Found it in the trash.
So this circles back to Richard Kind's character that their last name was David as well, which was very confusing. But so he had asked Larry why he didn't come to the fundraiser, which is for the aforementioned organization that supports inmates who are also artists. And he said that, I must have gotten lost in the mail.
Right.
Look, we've all said that. And I think it's a little harder in 2020 when you say, like, oh, I didn't get that email. It must not have gone through. Which there's a time where that was very believable. But now it's like, no, it's a sent here. And then that means on the other end, you definitely got it. And sometimes it's like, it tells me that you read it.
Right.
But, you know, you're still able... you're still able to do the thing where you can just say that a physical invitation got lost in the mail.
Right.
And that, of course, brings about the ire of the postman who's like, well, I hear you're saying, you know, you're disrespecting the United States Postal Service, which I thought was great.
Yeah.
And so we learned that, and I think it's very important not to disrespect the United States Postal Service because of how much just they bring to your house every day.
Right.
You know, they know your patterns, they know when you're home, they know when you're not. You know,
Uncle Sam.
Just saying,
Big brother.
So and then is more than happy to let Ted Danson know that he saw Larry's side sitting with Cheryl. So. that there's a lot. This mailman is definitely, I believe his name's Randy, mm-hmm. and maybe I'm wrong. But he can really create a lot of headaches for Larry. And Flobo, I'm wondering what you thought about the mailman.
I just figured out, man, here's this guy that's like gossiping around town. It's so easily triggered. He's about to go to someone's house and be like, yo, heard you talking crap about me, yo. It's like, oh my goodness. I really thought there was going to be a drag out fight there, but thankfully it wasn't. To be undone by the mailman must be incredibly embarrassing, I gotta say.
And by the way, his name is not Randy, it's Ted. It wasn't even
Ted. Randy was from last episode.
He's
pregnant.
That's why I got Randy in here. What do you think, James, about the mailman?
The mailman, you know, again, it's all in being introduced to this show. It's like I see the joke, but then there's another layer of joke on top of it. And for me, in that scene, it was he said to him, he's like, I can't take you seriously wearing shorts. Are you really trying to confront me right now wearing shorts?
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, you know what? There's some truth behind that. If someone tried to step to me wearing shorts, I would just laugh in their face. You look like a child, sir. And you want to step to me like a man? You're a child.
You're going to Miami.
Put some big boy pants on and use your big boy words and get out my face.
Now, I have a different perspective on this. I actually knew I was really close with somebody who worked for the Postal Service as a delivery person.
Sure.
So I was looking, like, I was basically listening to this conversation, like, okay, what he is saying, what the mail guy is saying, what Ted is saying is that everything's true. Like, he got all of his uniforms. Yeah. Like, he has to wear it. Yeah. Like, it's not like he really has an option. Yeah. And what's he going to do? Go off the clock and confront him? I mean, maybe he could have.
If you want to do some damage, that's what you do.
Yeah.
I can't lose a fight to a mailman. I will not tell anybody that ever happened.
Street cred.
Yeah, exactly. It was the ninjas, I swear.
We are almost out of time, but there's an important storyline that we do need to talk about, which is Larry and Rita, the receptionist from the lawyer's office, mm-hmm. whose interaction doesn't start off particularly strong about, like, really, you need the validation. And he's like, well, yeah, you know, I don't want to reach into my pocket. And then he's like, I was here more than an hour, more like an hour 10. So he gets the extra validation. But surprisingly, she's agreeable to go on a date with Larry where they try out some of the different restrooms, which we don't see that part, so we don't know if that part really happened. Maybe that was him winning her over. But I found a very sort of a funny scene was they're at Rita's place on the couch, and Larry is very meticulously going through consent and asking if this is okay and this isn't, and then he takes the step of filming it, you know, just to, you know, and then very funny because Rita's like, oh, can you send this to me afterwards? Yeah, I can CC you, I can blind CC, whatever you need. And, you know, when, you know, there's things that she's comfortable with and there's things that she's not comfortable with, she tells him, Larry's like, okay, that's great, looks like it's time to go. The way that the whole scene plays out, it seems like a 2020 love story, but you know, Rachel, I'm sure that this was very reminiscent of you and hubby Joe when you first met.
Again, you're just nailing my life story.
I haven't read your life story, but I feel like
you know. Yeah, I know. But I appreciated this. I love, like, Terry Polo as Rita. Like, I just feel like she plays, like, all the beats exactly the way it needs to be done. But it was hilarious for me watching Larry videotape himself, like, actually asking her, can I do this? I am going to touch your shoulder with my right hand. It was such a romantic, tender moment. Yes. I was like, wow, this is... I simultaneously felt bad for him and felt bad for her,
too. Oh, I felt particularly bad for her.
But she seemed to go along with it.
Yeah. And on the flip side, at least he was being a gentleman about it.
Yes.
Great point.
Give him that. Life lessons learned from Larry.
I've never seen a date end in a disposition like that before.
you must not be dating enough in 2020.
There you go.
There was times I couldn't tell if Rita was on board or not. Like, her face kind of wavered sometimes.
Yeah. She had to think about it, and then when she was definitely not on board, she made sure to let him know.
Yeah.
Let's get to our special segment, which is the Curb Correction Corner, and we will each take a moment where we disagree profusely with what Larry did in the episode. Rachel.
Oh, I have a big one. Okay. So when we get that, like, you know, one of the final moments where he, Larry, like, we think everything is turned up in the right direction for him. Mm-hmm. He goes, he's talking to Alice.
The assistant, she's going to go back to work.
Yeah, and Ted walks in, and it's.
He needs to side-sit.
And
just side-sitting's not enough.
No.
He has to hold her hands.
So that's what I was going to say, it's when Larry goes and he reaches for Alice's hand. Yeah. Like, he doesn't just side-sit.
No.
He grabs her, and it's like, okay, Larry, what are you doing?
Right.
You could have sat there and then, like, you know, I guess he was trying to make it look like he was on a date. But
Well, she was trying to get away.
Yeah.
And he couldn't let Ted see that. What was yours, James?
You know, for me, again, I got to throw in some restaurant industry server love.
Sure.
My curb correction corner definitely was when Larry shushed away the server.
When he's with Cheryl.
When he's with Cheryl sitting down after he proposes the rekindling of their relationship. And he shushes away the server. Like, as a server, I'm like, yo, you'll starve to death before I come back to you. And, like, if you remember, to bring things full circle, who was the only person in the entire episode who asked him about the diagnosis that test that he was having?
And he said that we're all pulling for you at the restaurant.
So, you know, sometimes we listen, you know?
Server gets a spinoff next season.
Right? Server gets a spinoff.
I'm just not into side-sitting at all. How do I express my romantic love for my significant other on a date? She gets the booth half, I get the chair half. It's easy. The whole, let me go change my assignment to be a geometry diagram, not my thing.
Mine's a little hypocritical because although I would have used the lawyer's restroom, I think that Larry knew better. He you know, it didn't even seem like it was an emergency. It was just more than he could. You know, I think emergency might change my sense on it. It was, as with so many things that Larry does, it was done out of spite. I know you have a news story, so let's get that in before we run out of time entirely.
AfterBuzz TV News.
Oh, I love this. Susie Essman, who plays Susie Green on the show, recently appeared on the Today Show, which is one of the best morning shows, according to my mom. She watches it every day. To talk about how to maintain and how to keep Curb Your Enthusiasm relevant after so much time between seasons. And frankly, it's all the things that piss off or annoy Larry. It's universal. They don't really go away. The idea now is to add more current element to keep things relevant for new fans. But ultimately, we're all curmudgeons on the inside. So check it out on Today News this week.
All right, thank you, Flobo. And we are indeed out of time. We went a little over, so my apologies to the affiliates. But we will be back next Monday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern, for another episode of the Curb Your Enthusiasm After Show. Until then, Rachel, where do people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, at Rach Goodman, or on Instagram on my author account, at Rachel Radner Author. If you're a fan of Shrill, we are also coming for the AfterBuzz show today at, me and James. We're going to be here at 7 p.m. and 8 p.m. Pacific Standard.
And James Maple.
You can follow me anywhere at Terrell James Maple. Holla at me and I will holla back.
Really?
Flobito.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at FloboBoys, on Instagram at Flobito, and of course, Flobito.com.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ and Flobo and myself Thursdays at 9 Pacific right here on AfterBuzz TV for the Star Trek Picard After Show. That is indeed all the time we have, but thanks so much, everybody, and we'll see you next week. Until then, Happy New Year!
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principal.